Hello, everyone, and welcome to From Tip to Tail, a podcast dedicated to animal welfare. This podcast is sponsored by Cuddly. Cuddly is the only crowdfunding platform built specifically for animal welfare organizations worldwide. I'm Bridget.
And I'm Sydney. We've spent years working with animal rescues and have seen such amazing innovation, strength, and heart.
Having this personal connection with rescuers has made us more informed, grateful, and inspired. We hope by giving you an inside look, you will be too.
Today, we're going to be speaking with Jessica Graff of Philly Bully Team, which is a 501c3 foster-based bully breed rescue. With the support of so many, they hope to set a fine example and maintain higher standards of excellence in the dog rescue community. We're so excited to get into this, so let's get started.
Hey, Jess, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Super great. Sydney, are you doing okay?
I'm doing great over here, Bridge.
Awesome. We're so excited to get into this with you. I mean, for so many reasons. Personally, I am a huge fan of Philadelphia in general. So I feel like it's going to be interesting to finally get some insight into all the work you're doing there and how everything is interconnected on the East Coast side of things. But before we really get into that, we always like to ask, so were you, like as a kid, like a huge animal lover, or how did you get into animal welfare?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually grew up in New Hampshire. That's where I lived until I was about 21. And then I moved to Philadelphia. I've always had animals. My family has always had animals. My grandparents, aunts, uncles, all that stuff. What drew me to pit bulls is when I was around 11 or 12 years old, we got a pit bull as a pet. And this was, I'm not going to say how long ago and age myself, but this was kind of before they really had that kind of stigma, but that stigma was still floating around. So I got him. He was this awesome dog. I had a cat and a chihuahua too, and he was great with all the animals. He was a big baby. He would sleep with me at night, all these great things. And then kind of as he got bigger and older, I noticed that a lot of my friends weren't allowed to come over to my house anymore. And when I asked them why, they said, oh, because you have a big dog. And I'm like, well, you have, you know, a golden retriever or a Labrador. They're the same size, if not larger. And they say, yeah, my mom just doesn't want me over because of the kind of dog it is. So that was kind of my first taste of the discrimination that these dogs face. And it kind of made me this like ride or die for them. Like I always wanted to advocate for these kinds of dogs because of my personal experience with them growing up.
It's so true. I mean, everyone says that too, like dogs over a certain weight or something like that, but you know, they're actually implying like a very specific kind of dog.
Yeah.
You see that in like apartment applications.
Yeah.
They'll kind of like, they'll word around it, but I know what they're saying. They're pretty much saying pit bull breeds and whatnot.
Yep. I just put terrier mix on
them. Right? Bull terrier. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Like terrier. It could be a rat terrier. Mm-hmm. It could be any kind of terrier.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And that's heartbreaking, especially like so young and having to hear that from your friends and for that to be such a, like that influences like your relationships and so many other things too. So how did you start getting involved in animal welfare and the nonprofit world?
So my husband and I, we've been together for about 11 years. And when I met him, he had a pit bull, and that was kind of one of the things that drew me towards him. I was like, oh, just a guy and his dog, you know, and I didn't have any dogs at the time. So we started hanging out and then, you know, we moved in together and we kind of just became those people that our friends would call if they found an injured animal or an animal that was being given away on Craigslist that was very questionable. And we would always take these animals and mostly pit bulls again, but obviously cats or rabbits or anything. And we would get them any kind of medical attention they needed, fix them up and then help find them a home. Over time, this became very expensive to do on our own. So that's when we decided, hey, maybe we start a nonprofit. And before we started the nonprofit, I actually started fostering with other rescues and doing transport with rescues just so I could kind of see how the dynamic of all that and how all of that worked before I jumped into it. So that's how we kind of got into it.
That's such a great way to learn too, because I feel like even for better or for worse, you're like, okay, I like this. I would change this. And you can make tweaks and kind of make it your own. And then you can also, of course, once you're on the foster side too, I feel like you can like hear the grumblings of other fosters.
Yeah.
Who are like, yeah, this is how we feel about this. Whereas like maybe they wouldn't say it to like the founder space.
Yeah, exactly. And not that I do everything right all the time, but, you know, being on that other side, I definitely learned some things to not do, you know, with my rescue to try and make it as successful as possible. And the fosters, because we don't have a facility, really are the backbone of the rescue. So making them happy directly helps us save more lives.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, so you're specific to Philadelphia, right? I mean, it's in your name.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then I also know that you have fosters out of state as well. Is there like a certain perimeter that you have? You're like, we'll go this far for fosters, or are you like everywhere or anywhere?
It's a logistical thing. It kind of depends. The point with fostering is that you take this dog in, you house them until they find their forever home. Being that most of our adopters come from Philadelphia, you have to be able to meet with the adopter to do a dog meet. So we try and keep it within an hour or two of Philadelphia, but if, you know, say the person's 2.5 hours away and that's going to make or break and save this dog's life, then we will remove those boundaries and get the dog's life saved. So we prefer within, you know, like an hour and a half, 2 hours, but if it comes down to making sure this dog gets off death row and out of the shelter, then obviously we can overlook those things.
Hmm. That's nice. You're meeting them where, however you need to make it happen, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm wondering too, just because I feel like you might have an inside look, how is breed-specific legislation now? Because I know it feels like every year things are tweaked, or there's even mm-hmm. like big breakthroughs that come out, and then maybe you feel like, oh, you said that was going to be a big breakthrough and it doesn't feel as big anymore.
Yeah, so in the northeastern part of the United States, it's not that bad. You know, like you said earlier, we have the landlords who have these, you know, stipulations on renters that are obviously targeted towards pit bull breeds, but they don't say that, but we know that that's what they're saying. As far as, you know, hard concrete laws, there aren't a lot in the South where we do get some of our dogs. It's really bad. We do work with a lot of shelters in the South who, because they're contracted by that county, they have to take in every single stray dog that comes in. However, because of BSL, they cannot adopt out any type of blocky-headed dog, no matter what their DNA says, no matter what their mix is. If it looks anything like a pit bull, they cannot adopt this dog out. So the dog's only way to get out of the shelter is to be taken by a rescue. So we work with a lot of shelters in the South to get the dogs out of there. And these could be cat-friendly, kid-friendly, dog-friendly, you know, 9-month-old, perfect temperament dogs, and they're not allowed to be adopted out just because of their physical appearance.
Well, and this might be a silly question, but what is BSL?
So it's breed-specific legislation. You know, you can't own them within, you know, these parameters of this county, or if you do own them, you have to pay, you know, a fee to own them. You have to have them muzzled out in public and basically treat them like they have done something wrong when they haven't necessarily done anything wrong.
Yeah. I mean, that's so heartbreaking. And I feel like it was quite a shock to me to realize that there were places where it's not just like frowned upon or like there's a bummer stereotype about them. It's like these dogs' existence is illegal in these places and they are very much still existing in these places. And it's very heartbreaking to realize what that reality would mean for them. So it sounds like you do a little bit of transport then out of the South. Are you typically working with like specific shelters or rescues?
Yeah. So there is this one shelter in South Carolina. It's York County, South Carolina, and they are kind of a hotbed for dog fighting. We work with them a ton. And these dogs that come from dog fighting, they have to leave the state because you don't want that dog fighter's relatives coming in and adopting the dog or their friends coming in and adopting the dog. So there was a 42 dog bust last September. They rescued 42 dogs from a fighting ring. And I think we ended up taking almost 20 of those dogs. So we just try and get as many out as we can with those shelters. And the pit bulls down there, they just don't really stand a chance with the culture. And it's just really sad. And there aren't strict enough humane laws to protect these dogs. I know that the 20 dogs that we got, this was the guy's third time being busted for dog fighting. So how does he have 42 dogs on his property? You know, the laws just aren't there to protect these animals.
Yeah. I feel like it's almost something that people maybe just don't talk about too, because I feel like we've talked to Southern Rescue before and Southern Shelters and whatnot, and that's just not a conversation that comes up is, you know, like the bully headed breeds can't be adopted out, or, you know, that there's big dog biting ring issues and things like that. So it's really interesting, really eye-opening to hear that, like Bridget said, like that there is certain cultures and whatnot that are still in existence and that you wouldn't think that are there.
Yeah. I mean, we know of a pretty large scale operation in New Jersey right now, but the people, and I hate to say this because I think we always equate intelligence as a positive thing, but this guy is so smart that, you know, these dog fighters, they use a bunch of code words. They use a bunch of, you know, different kinds of forms and code words and stuff that you kind of have to learn to know what they're talking about. And they're so smart with this.
It's a business for them.
It's a business. Yeah. It's their livelihood. You know, it's so hard to really nail them and get them on these charges because they just know how to evade the system so well.
Wow. Right. And I do know, like, just from talking to other rescuers, it feels like the system kind of works with them in a lot of ways, unfortunately, where, like, even in some of these really terrible cruelty cases, it's like, and I'm not sure if it's different state to state, but I know with one rescuer we spoke to, she was saying that in order for them even to be like charged with a felony of animal abuse, the animal has to actually die. Like, and so it's this bizarre in between too, where it's like they're trying to save an animal and that's helping these people get off on a lighter sentence.
Yeah. Yeah. We had one dog that we just brought up from the South, and she's probably about a year old. Great with everyone, great with cats, great with dogs. She's an angel. And basically her circumstances, and this is going to get a little graphic, so I don't know if this is, you know, she was being kept on a property, and it was actually the same property that we got those dog fighting dogs from. And she's being kept in a kennel outside, and it was her and another dog, and they were starved so badly that one of the dogs passed away. And the dog passed away, and then she ended up consuming the dog because it was that or she would pass away too. And the owner wasn't charged, couldn't be charged because you can't prove that he starved them. Like, it could have been like, oh, we don't know how that dog died, you know, and a dog's going to eat a dog if there's a dog. Like, there wasn't any concrete proof when it's like all the circumstantial evidence points to abuse and neglect. And I feel like that's why advocating is so important, because the dog can't say, yeah, he starved me, you know, yeah, he beat me, he neglected me. The dog can't tell their story. So that's something that is really sad too, is you have these victims that don't have a voice at all.
Oh, it gives me chills.
I know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're lucky to have you in the very
thank you
to speak to some level of whatever you can come to.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for us too, I mean, I'm sure you get this as well all over social media. Like, people get really fired up and they want justice and they want people to be held accountable. And that's an understandable feeling. But I know for us, our main goal is always like, listen, like, there are a lot of things that need to happen on that end for something to come of like legislation and lawyers and who's allowed to prosecute and who's not and things like that. And I feel like that can get a bit muddled. So I feel like our main goal is like, listen, we can't do a lot in a lot of cases about that in a specific dog's instance. So we focus on the dog's healing and moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't kind of sit in that space where you are helpless. You know, you do what you can. And one of the dogs that we pulled from the fighting ring, she passed away, and it was accumulation of just being in that environment for so long that killed her. And I'm actually trying to go to the trial in South Carolina to see if I can read a victim impact statement, like, on her behalf.
Aww.
Because she can't, you know, she can't say all of these things. And so I'm trying to do that to see if maybe that will give him a harsher sentence or, you know, sorry, I'm like getting emotional.
No, that's beautiful.
This dog was like, had my heart. She was like my soul dog in the rescue. To just try and give them that voice and make people that are there and that hear, that can hear me, realize, you know, what these dogs really do go through, despite them coming out resilient on the other end. You know, they had to work really hard to get through everything, you know, and just because a dog comes out the other end an angel baby, which they all are, you know, doesn't mean that it doesn't matter what happened to them beforehand.
Well, and I think you're speaking to, just because there are those ones that do make it through, that do, you know, go through absolute hell and they make it out on the other end. There's probably hundreds and thousands that didn't get to make it, unfortunately. And
exactly.
I think
yeah.
speaking even in that instance in which they did make it, you are speaking on behalf of everyone and every pet that didn't get to, unfortunately.
Right.
Definitely. And I mean, speaking to another end too of like just south to north transport, I think something that I've just seeing more and more of, and something that is a little bit more optimistic is I know there just are so many, there's so many animals in the South too, as well. So it's amazing to see that you're working with people to transport animals out, because I know we've been working with a pilot that's been transporting them out, because I mean, for us, we're on the West Coast, and it's like, there are like something like 100 applications at some organizations of people just like begging and waiting for an animal to come in.
Yeah, 100%. And we get, like I said, we get these dogs from the South who have these amazing temperaments. They make great family dogs. And I'm like, I have an application for this dog. Let's get the dog up, you know, let him decompress for a few weeks and reassess them, and then get them into this home that would be perfect for them. You know, so it's really, it's a shame that so many dogs in the South are suffering, and that the laws aren't strict enough and the breeding laws aren't there. It just, it's really horrible.
Right. It feels so heavy, I think, sometimes too. But how long have you been working in rescue then yourself?
So we officially established the rescue in March of 2018, but I was working in rescue about 2 years before that. So we've been doing it for a couple years. I have my husband with me. He does all like the scary stuff. Like if he has to go like, you know, to a bad neighborhood and check something out, like that's what he does. And then, you know, I kind of do the other stuff, but we make a really good team because we balance each other out and we're kind of down for anything. We put ourselves in a lot of tricky situations to help dogs out.
Oh my gosh. I'm sure. Even just as like a side note, I've been thinking too, I'm like, how brave you have to be to walk up to a dog on the street and just be like, I'm going to take you, not even just grab you, but like into your car, into, you never know what's going to happen.
It takes a lot of trust on both ends, I think. I always have treats in my car. I always have like cans of wet dog food in case I see a dog in need. My husband will spend hours sitting with a dog trying to earn their trust to get them into safety. So he's really, really good with that.
Oh my gosh, you guys are such a cute animal rescue couple too.
I know.
Does that just make you fall in love with him like all the more when you see him do that?
Yeah, it really does. He's so good with the dogs. We have this one dog right now named Bear, who was basically his family used him for breeding and then kicked him out of the house. And he was roaming the neighborhood for like weeks. And my husband was finally able to get him. And he definitely has a lot of trust issues. He's very insecure. He's with us right now. And my husband's really the only one that can handle him right now. But it's like they're best friends. They're boys. And he's just so good with the harder cases. Yeah.
I love that. Well, and kind of just as like a PSA for everyone out there, what would you recommend if someone does see a stray dog on the street, or, you know, does see, you know, an animal that they think might need help? What would, I guess, you'd recommend that they do?
Yeah. So it kind of depends on where you live and what the laws are there. Mm-hmm. In Philadelphia, technically, we're not allowed to take strays in, but we do. But, you know, you would call your local animal control or your local SPCA, or you can even, if you feel safe and you feel like the dog's safe, you can grab the dog, bring him to the animal control, the SPCA, or if they're super friendly, you want to take them to the vet and see if they're microchipped, you can do that too. I know with our animal control, they're always so crowded that you can actually go online and file what's called a found report. And it basically is like, oh, we found this dog at this intersection. This is what he looks like. And then if an owner comes in or calls them looking for the dog that fits that description, they can link you guys up and get the dog home.
How amazing. How cool. I didn't know that that was something that existed. That's such a great way to network too. If you did, you know, if that dog wasn't homeless or things like that.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know that exists. So it's good to have, you know, and it kind of keeps the dog out of the shelter system while trying to locate their owners.
That's incredible. Wow. That's amazing. I didn't even think about that. Well, and I kind of wanted to, this might be a little off topic, but I kind of wanted to ask, because I know your rescue, it does take in, not maybe all the time, but it has taken in animals that other people might consider like lost causes, or, you know, there's always those people that are going to say, why are you spending so much on that dog, you know, or, and things like that. I guess I would want to know, how do you deal with those situations? And what do you think people should know about those kinds of situations?
So I think that, you know, there's a lot of people want to equate dog behavior and dog emotions to human behavior, human emotions. And I think that's a natural thing. They're our best friends. They sleep in bed with us. We put sweaters on them. I put sweaters on my dogs, you know? So, but we have to think that dogs have a different way of communicating with people, and they have a different way of showing stress and fear and those kinds of things. So I think we need to pull those things apart. And I think every dog at least deserves a chance to have those issues explored. When we come across a big behavior case, we usually start with a basic vet visit, get blood work drawn, make sure it's not something like Lyme's disease can cause behavior changes in dogs. Make sure it's not something like that. And we give the dog a quiet place to decompress, make sure they have plenty of food and water at all times so they don't feel like that they have to fight for resources. Just showing that they're safe. We don't try not to give them too much, you know, at once. We have a whole list of trainers that we use regularly, and we try and fit each dog with a trainer we think would be able to meet their needs. I think it is important to know that, you know, we give every dog a chance, but unfortunately not every dog can be helped. Mm-hmm. And that is a reality of rescue. And that's a reality that the public actually does like to reject a lot. You know, if mm-hmm. we do have to make those decisions,
yeah,
I'm transparent. You know, I do tell people, hey, we really tried and it just, you know, we couldn't do it. And this is at the suggestion of a behaviorist and a vet and a trainer, mm-hmm. you know, and we really get beat up on those posts. But I think that those are things that we need to talk about. You know, yeah. It comes with the territory. And if we're going to talk about saving these dogs and trying, and we also need to talk about the stuff that is not easy.
Absolutely. Because I do think people, and rescue is inevitably very passionate, very emotional sort of,
oh, yeah.
you know, sort of thing. So I think when people do see those situations, it's really easy for them to just get really just emotional about it versus like the rationale behind it versus the reasoning behind it. So it's really nice to hear. And it is a conversation that needs to be had, because I do think that a lot of rescues do tend to get a lot of hate from making those really hard decisions that they go home and they're just as heartbroken about it as,
oh, yeah.
you know, as somebody viewing it or somebody seeing that post and whatnot. So I really do appreciate you saying that, because I do think it is something that a lot of people need to hear more.
Yeah, of course. We had a dog that me and my husband had for about a year that we were trying to rehabilitate, and he came from a really bad situation. And we just tried everything we could for him. I mean, he was at the vet multiple times getting blood work done. He was at a, you know, behaviorist, which cost a couple thousand dollars, several different trainers after a year. I mean, it felt like he was our dog, you know, but and then at the end of the day, after, you know, this year, we were like, we can't, whatever damage was done to him, you know, we didn't do, it was done before we did it. And we at least gave him like a really good year of, you know, belly rubs and a full stomach and warmth and all that stuff. And sometimes that's your job, and that's where your job ends, and you just do the best that you can.
Absolutely. Really, absolutely.
Yeah. And circling back to like funding, so how has the past year been for you?
It's been difficult and interesting. So we haven't been able to do, you know, in-person events because of COVID restrictions. So trying to find other ways to raise funds by doing online things, discovering Cuddly has been so huge and has literally helped us save lives. There are dogs that I've come across where I'm like, okay, this is going to be really expensive. And I don't know if we can do it, but I'm like, okay, if I reach out to Cuddly, I know they'll help me with this one, and I can raise the money for it. So, you know, having you guys on board has been huge. Trying to think of different ways to fundraise has been a challenge for sure. But now that the weather is getting warmer, we can get back outside and do some events. That's good. But it definitely was very scary in the beginning, not knowing, you know, if we were going to have to slow down or not, because we didn't want to slow down. And with the coronavirus, so many people being out of work, we saw this surge in abandoned animals and animals that needed to be surrendered and animals with vet bills that their owners couldn't meet because they were out of work and it wasn't their fault. So it just presented a different set of challenges. And I feel like we've been able to adapt well to that set of challenges and just kind of keep on trucking along.
Were you still able to, because I was hearing from a lot of other rescues that their like adoption rates went up or that their foster rates went up for a good portion of quarantine or the good portion of the end of 2020. Was that something that you guys experienced?
Yeah, we definitely saw a huge increase in people that want to adopt, people that want to foster. I feel like it's kind of a slippery slope. It's kind of I feel like we're on thin ice a little bit because you don't want to put a dog into a home because they're like, hey, we're home all the time. So you kind of have to have that conversation with adopters. You know, what's your plan when you go back to work? And, you know, is this something that you can still commit to when things pick back up and you have a social life again and you're back at work again? So we definitely saw the uptick. I was able, because people were out of work, I was able to bring on a lot more volunteers to help with those applications, which has been great. But it definitely is a different conversation and it brings a lot of new questions to the application process.
Absolutely. I know that was a huge worry that there was going to be that wave of, you know, I'm home, I can foster. I mean, even like me and Bridget, we fostered. It was my first time fostering, but I was like, I'm home now, I can do it. I remember Rusty's coming to me like worrying that that wave was going to hit of when people head back to work, are they going to be like, I can't take care of this dog anymore, I can't take care of this cat. And then they were going to return it. And then rescues were going to see like that huge influx of animals that they spent so much time getting into those homes.
Right. Yeah, that was a fear. But, you know, we have seen some of that. But I feel like we've, again, bringing on more volunteers, they're amazing. It has definitely helped us navigate that situation.
Mm-hmm. So have you guys been able to do, or are you guys planning to do any like in-person events like in the year 2021?
Yeah, we actually just had one on Saturday. It was a meet and greet with our dogs. It was at a brewery. It was outside. Everyone had masks. We did the social distancing thing. It worked out really well. Everyone is kind of, I feel like they're kind of, you know, they kind of understand how things have to go now in the new routine, what the new protocol and routine is. So it worked out well. And then we have another event, I believe at the end of April at another brewery. Breweries are great for these events, like dogs and beer, you know, where you can go wrong.
Right.
We do have events lined up and we'll kind of just, you know, see what happens with them. And we're kind of just taking it like one day at a time right now.
That's so exciting. I feel like we're all so ready to be like, yes, like bring on the dogs and beer.
Yeah. Right? I'm like, sounds like a dream after months cooped up in this house.
Yeah.
And have you been doing a lot more of like virtual experiences, like more virtual adoptions or any like learning centers or anything online, or have you just been kind of holding out?
So we do our application process. We do a home inspection and we've been doing that via FaceTime or Zoom as to not go into people's houses. We did do one auction event, which brought in a lot of money for us, which was a great fundraising event. And then I actually just brought on somebody who's going to be our fundraising coordinator from now on. So I'm excited to see what kind of ideas she has that are virtual. But yeah, not a ton changed in that aspect for us.
And I know you said you have a lot of a lot of volunteers right now. Are you still looking for volunteers? Are you still like in a need of a certain area?
We always need help processing applications. It just takes up a lot of our time. We get a ton of them. That's one thing that we don't want to kind of gloss over. We want to take our time processing applications. You know, sometimes people complain adopting is hard. I think it should be hard. You know, it's a living, breathing animal that we're putting into your home. So we can always use help with processing applications and people that, you know, can do these home inspections and that can check vet references and maybe do some online sleuthing for us and checking people's Facebooks and stuff like that is something we always need help with.
Sweet. And if someone were interested in volunteering, where would they go? Just to your website, to your Facebook? What's the best place?
Facebook's good. They can also just email us. It's phillybullyteam@yahoo.com.
That's wonderful. And I mean, so you've been doing this for a few years now. And so we always ask, because we know we have a lot of people who are one and two people operations and who are really shoestring budget. So if you could talk to yourself when you were just getting set up and started, what's some advice that you would give for yourself? Or would there be like any tools that you're like, oh my gosh, get to this faster?
Yeah. You know, there's this program called Shelter Love that for some reason I didn't know existed until like a month ago. And it organizes all of your files and it literally does the work of like five people. And I wish I had known about it. I don't know why I didn't know about this amazing program that keeps all your files. It keeps your fosters in place. It's incredible. And I wish I had known about that. I wish I had told myself like self-care is really important, you know, in any industry, in any field, especially with this, because it kind of is a 24-hour job. You know, I can say, hey guys, I tried to take off two nights last week. I was like, hey guys, not available after five these nights. Leave me alone. Both nights I had dogs end up in the emergency room. It's like they heard me say that and decided that they were going to have issues. So just like trying to set boundaries and self-care is something that I have always struggled with, but I feel like maybe I wish I had a plan beforehand, because now I kind of go with this momentum that I have to keep up all the time.
Well, and I'm sure the moment you turn off your phone too, you're probably like, oh my God, I'm probably missing so many calls. And it's
okay?
Just constantly, yeah. Mm-hmm, it's constantly on your head, even if that phone is off.
Yeah. And I do manage anxiety and OCD, and that definitely plays into me worrying about how everything's going. So having, you know, a good relationship with my therapist and trying to figure out how to balance everything has been a challenge for me, but I'm constantly worrying, you know, what's going on. Cause it can happen. Anything can happen any time of day. It's not like, you know, I go to the office from 9 to 5 and then 5 o'clock, I can go home and not think about it. It just kind of is always there, you know? So self-care is something that I wish I had told myself earlier on. I really need to focus on.
Absolutely. I think that's so true too. Just because, again, because rescue is such, it can be such a personal mission. It can be, you know, something that comes from your soul that you really want to do. So it's hard to almost turn that off because you feel like you're letting people down or you're letting dogs down. It's not like dogs get dumped from 9 to 5 and people, yes, aren't, you know, it's like, it's not like they have a time schedule. Like my dog, oh, I'm going to eat chocolate at, it's 4:45. I guess I'm going to eat chocolate, yeah, right now instead of 6. And you know, mom's going to worry. She's going to be off by 5. It's not like that. So it's really, I really like that you said that because I think that is really important. You do get a lot of emotional fatigue. And it's really easy to burn out so quick if you don't set those boundaries for yourself.
Yeah. And I'm very, very fortunate. I have a couple of my volunteers that have been with me since the beginning, and I can be like, hey, can you take over for the rest of the day? Like I'm kind of at my wit's end right now. And they're like, absolutely 100%. So having that support system is huge. It's vital. You have to do it. You have to have it, or you're just going to burn out and then you can't save any animals.
Mm-hmm. I love that you say that too, because I feel like people go into rescue because they're like, I'm not good with people. I only want to work with dogs. But it's like, you kind of need people to do it. You have to have people to lean on. You have to have,
yeah,
you know, the volunteers. You have, if you have a board, you have to have that set of people there that are going to support you and be there when you're burnt out or when you can't do it.
Exactly. And I feel like I've made some of my strongest friendships through rescue, for sure. Before this, I was bartending and I was managing my husband's restaurants. And I made friends and that was great, but I just feel like the bond between, I feel like we're war buddies, you know, like the bond that
right,
we made.
Shared experience.
Shared experience under these really stressful situations. It's just, you make this little family for yourself and it's amazing.
Absolutely. Well, and I'm sure a lot of rescues kind of take this question a little different ways. Cause I know some are like, we're just taking it day by day, but then there's others who are like, no, we have, you know, 15 years of plans to go. So I kind of want to ask, in the next 5 to 10 years, where would you like to see Philly Bully Team, or where would you like to be?
Oh man, that's a good question. So I think the next natural step for a lot of people is to have a facility. Personally, that's not something I'm interested in. I think that foster care, and this is not a dig at facilities, I understand that they're a necessity, why they need to exist. I just think that foster base is more beneficial to the animals. You get to see the real personality. You get to work out any behavior stuff. You know, they get to be exposed to cats, kids, all that stuff. And it helps you find a better fit. So I would like to maybe have a small facility with like 4 emergency kennels, just because we do get calls from the police in the middle of the night to pick up dogs. And we do get fosters to kick their dogs out, you know, so it would be nice to just have a small space where, you know, for emergencies, I'd love to be more organized as an organization and have a larger foster network that didn't feel so overwhelming to me and the kind of small team we have right now. So I don't know, in the next 5 to 10 years, I guess I would just like to keep this pace up and maybe grow even more and maybe be able to also like educate people or work more with the community to feed animals so people can keep their dogs and help with vet care so people can keep their animals. You know, I never want finances to be a reason why someone has to give a dog up. And we have paid bills for people so they can keep their dogs, but maybe some kind of like grant or foundation that could help with that and ease the burden on the shelter system.
I love that. Well, I can see it. You guys are going to get there.
Thank you.
You guys do amazing things. I'm so excited to see what you guys have in store. We kind of like to draw out the podcast with a little bit of fun questions. So I kind of wanted to ask, you said you have personal pets in your home right now?
Yes.
Yes. Are they just fosters?
No, they're my own pets. I have 3 cats and 2 dogs. I have 2 really young pitties because we did just lose a dog about 1.5 years ago. And then 2.5 years ago, we lost a dog before that. So we have 2 younger pitties. Then we have this like Norwegian forest cat. And I don't know if you've ever seen these cats. They are so magical. And it's just like he got like kicked out of his house. And then the neighborhood cats were like beating him up. So we took him in. And then I have like my 2 cats that I've had for 12 years now. And I've had them, like I had them before I met my husband, like before any of this. So those are like my
the
best
OGs.
Yeah, the OGs. Yeah.
The OGs.
We ride hard. Yeah. For each other. They're my best friends. So those are my personal animals.
Oh, sweet. Well, then these questions can kind of apply. You can kind of pick one if whatever the question is going to best apply to. So the first one is, if your animal, dog, or cat were president, what would be the first thing they did?
If it was my cat, probably take a nap.
Of course.
Yeah, if it was my dog, probably pee on the rug in the Oval Office.
Oh my gosh.
First orders of business.
Right. It marked the territory.
Yeah. And yeah.
Next question would be, if one of your animals or all of them could talk, what would be the first thing that they said?
Please stop bringing dogs into the house. Please stop bringing random animals into the house and give me more treats.
Are they like territorial a little bit? They're like, who is this weirdo?
You know, like the cats are, they get scared with the new dog. So they run and hide. My one dog loves everything. I don't think there's much going on upstairs. So he just loves everything. And then my other dog, she was like severely traumatized as a puppy. So like everything kind of just freaks her out and scares her. So I just have like a neurotic grab bag of animals.
You got a bunch of personalities.
So, yeah. We have a lot of reactions when an animal comes into the house.
Oh my gosh.
How funny. But you're like, it's good for you. This is, we're sensitizing you. You need the socialization.
Exactly. That's what I tell them.
Well, so I do want to ask if there's like one specific organization that you look to that you're like, oh man, I love what they're doing. Like, do you have a rescue crush like that you really love?
There is this one rescue I really love. They're called Zoe's House. And I talk to them a lot. We help each other out a lot. And she specializes in saving puppy mill dogs. She'll drive up to where all the puppy mills are in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And she'll take like all the moms that they can't breed anymore or the dads. And, you know, a lot of rescues rely so heavily on highly adoptable dogs and puppies and stuff. And she just goes right in and takes like these dogs that have all these medical problems and that have been neglected for all these years and they're older. And she takes them and rehabilitates them and adopts them out. And I just have so much respect for that because I think that's probably one of the hardest ways to do rescue. You know, it's not taking the easy way to do rescue. She's doing something really impactful and really hard to do. And I just totally admire her for it.
Well, and she's taking the moms too and the dads, you said. So I feel you know, puppies are, I mean, not that every puppy is easy. Puppies come with a bunch of, you know, medical conditions sometimes, but puppies are generally pretty easy to adopt out. But I've heard of people leaving behind mom because, you know, mom's going to be harder.
Will do that. Yeah. And I have such a thing for throwaway mamas. Like that's my weakness. And I take the mamas and I'm like, okay, the puppies can come too. Like, we'll figure it out. You know, but like, I love the moms.
You're the opposite.
I'm the total opposite. And the shelters like always laugh at me. Cause I'm like, well, like, does another rescue want the puppies if I take mom? Like, I don't, you know.
And the moms are always so sweet.
They're so sweet. And I think we have about like 4 or 5 throwaway mamas in the rescue right now. And they are my absolute favorite. And I think that's another reason I love Zoe's House so much is because I love the throwaway mamas. And I feel like she just really does the work. And it's, to just be really honest, the longer I'm in rescue, the more I see rescues in it for reasons that I don't think are totally genuine. And I feel like she's super genuine and she's doing all the hard work. And I love that about her.
Absolutely. That's so sweet.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Well, and our last question is a little bit hard. So people have a hard time answering it, but it's, if you had one life motto, what would it be?
Pet the dog. Just pet all the dogs. If you see a dog, pet it. You're going to regret it if you don't. Just pet every dog that you can pet. Because they're going to love it. You're going to love it. Just pet them all. The world a better place.
Oh, I love that. Make the world a better place. Exactly. You're going to be happy. It's going to be a good thing. Well, it was so sweet talking to you, Jessica. I am so excited to watch what you guys are going to do. I feel like you guys have such big things, and you guys are already doing big things. You're doing such amazing work.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I just love that you guys are advocating for, I'm a big pitbull lover. So I love that you're advocating for them and you're trying to break away all the discrimination that comes with that breed. So really, really love what you guys are doing. And I really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
We are so grateful we had the opportunity to speak with Jess about everything she knows about bully breeds. It's heartbreaking to know that breed-specific legislation is still in effect, but we're all hopeful that in the coming years, things will change. If you want to learn a little bit more about Philly Bully Team, you can check our show notes or our blog.
And as always, remember to rate, like, and subscribe to this podcast. Be sure to follow Cuddly on all social media accounts at We Love Cuddly. That's C-U-D-D-L-Y. Thanks, guys.